Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. And because you are so lucky on this fine Tuesday afternoon, William and Evan, it is May 30th. We are fresh off of Memorial Day weekend. Ev, you have a nice Memorial Day weekend. I know you took some time off last week. Well deserved,
what?
My friend.
What? Is it? Is it Monday?
It is Tuesday, actually.
Oh, man.
You're close.
Oh, man. No, I had a great week. I had a... We used it efficiently, you know? I didn't have to leave the studio for days and days and days. We used the natural-born weekend, our natural-born holiday on this last Monday, and I'm back. I didn't even feel I missed all that much excitement here at the station.
I mean, you couldn't have asked for much nicer weather to be off, right? I was outside in the yard all day the past couple of days. It was absolutely gorgeous.
I thanked you all weekend, yeah.
All weekend, oh yeah. It is a Tuesday, which means it is my, fourth favorite Wednesday of the week. We'll be with you all week as Papa Luke takes some well-deserved R&R himself. And when Luke is out of town and Will and Evan are left here, what does that mean, Ev? It means it's a party.
Yeah, it's a party, it's a party, it's a party. Yeah, it's a party, it's a party, it's a party.
Oh, solid, man. And it was. It was all weekend long. I was up till dawn most days. You know, so I'd be able to help with some, just help, you know, just be available. Because I'm on vacation, I don't do anything. I can't not be at least partially working. Don't feel bad for me. That's not why I say it. It's just who I am, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hey, it keeps you busy. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
As long as you're enjoying yourself, too. And so we're here to party all week. If you want to join in on this party, give us a call, 844-967-2789. We had a busy, busy week of news. Particularly over the weekend, the long Memorial Day weekend. But I'm going to, in homage to Luke, I'm going to start a little bit local with, I don't know if you saw this story, Ev, but reading from Urban Milwaukee, Wisconsin is planning passenger trains to Green Bay and Madison. Startup could be funded by $44 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure law. The proposed Wisconsin Rail Plan 2050 includes conceptual plans to add two passenger rail lines in Wisconsin, bolstering the Amtrak service between Chicago and Milwaukee and the Amtrak Empire Builder between Milwaukee, La Crosse, and St. Paul. High-speed rail, it's about time.
We almost got here. We almost got here, like, 10, 12 years ago? Almost.
Yeah, 2010. Yeah, and actually, the article touches on that. The new trains are very similar to the aborted 2010 high-speed rail plan, functioning as extensions of the line, allowing riders to access the existing stations in Milwaukee, Sturtevant, Glenview, and Chicago without changing trains. The Federal Railroad Administration, with $44 billion in funding from the bipartisan infrastructure law, will ultimately award grants via its Corridor Identification and Development Program. The FRA intends to award $500,000 for further study of each selected corridor, including development of a scope, schedule, and cost development plan. Awards are expected to be announced this summer, which would put the selected corridors on a pathway to securing more grants. I, for one, am ecstatic high-speed rail is long, long overdue in the state of Wisconsin.
It's huge.
Particularly Milwaukee to Madison. I think that's the obvious example. But Madison to Green Bay as well. And I believe I saw that Packers CEO Mark Murphy was even quoted in this article as he's looking to shave 10 years off of that timeline because the Packers are pursuing special trains to Green Bay for the 2025 NFL draft that was recently awarded to Titletown.
Man, it's crazy too. Just as I don't know, I'd have to look at it for sure, but I remember as early as this past December, right? Just a few months ago, there was quite a bit of opposition to revitalizing this train idea here in Wisconsin. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how much resistance is met here.
Well, and we see this conversation kind of brought up in different from different perspectives in a number of different ways. You know, our cities are obviously built for individual car transit, and we're seeing a lot of this in Milwaukee with, you know, Dan has been on the show numerous times to talk about the highway renovations that we're potentially looking into. But so much of American transit is predicated on private car ownership that if you want to have the kind of flourishing, vibrant, lively communities that I think all human beings naturally yearn for, whether they admit it or not, you know, we see, I'll defer to social media because I'm chronically online. It's probably actually unhealthy to the degree, but there's a lot of, you know, positive correspondence to a lot of European cities, how walkable they are and just how alive they really feel because sure. You can get anywhere you need without a private vehicle.
Yes.
And just the space that private vehicles take up.
To the point that having your own you're having your own car is unusual in some of these places.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly. And that's not even taking the financial perspective of it's incredibly expensive to own a car. But if you want to be able to have people come from out of town to work in your cities, if you want to have young people visiting your cities, spending money, just from a tourist perspective, the ability to move around the state without requiring private transportation is absolutely invaluable. And I am so excited to see this project underway. For how often, you know, I don't get to Madison as often as I would like. Occasionally, you know, I'll be in studio for the show and whatnot, but you got to drive. And if those options were more plentiful, I don't think I am alone in saying that I would be more than happy to utilize this whenever I have the opportunity available. I'm hoping that we can get some thoughts on this as well. If anybody else has any opinion on the upcoming transit line, 844-967-2789. You can be like our friend Mark. Mark, what's on your mind today?
Whenever rail comes up, I get back to the point that Scott Walker gave up close to, it would have been, you know, what, 800 some million dollars that of federal funding for high-speed rail in the state of Wisconsin. We ended up having to pay, I don't know how many millions, because, you know, he passed on that way to pay that to the railroad team, because we're going to be manufacturing
breach of contract
railroad cars in this state. It is just ridiculous to me that he's not condemned every time this comes up, because it would have been such an economic boon to the state of Wisconsin that to have that rail to going from Milwaukee to Madison up to the city, up to Minneapolis, St. Paul, or maybe, you know, that, you know, who knows what kind of spur lines could have come off of that, and, you know, it links to other transit type things that, infrastructure that got ignored by Scott Walker, the money they invested passed up, the opportunity loss cost is what I wonder what if we would have taken, say, for the money for the broadband, $25 million was offered to the state of Wisconsin to improve broadband back in 2011. How much opportunity, how many millions of dollars did we lose because we don't have the broadband in the state going back to that amount of time? I mean, that, yeah, it's all well and good we're going to have it now, but I mean that the Republicans went right along with this, and they should be condemned for not taking the money back then, because they cost this state probably billions of dollars. They're perfectly willing to hand out money to Terry Gow, who has swindled other communities out of money, you know, over the decades, that and, you know, they just kind of signed over $4 billion to that guy. And, you know, didn't want to invest in people in the state of Wisconsin. I mean,
that's a theme.
Just,
that's a theme that I'm seeing quite frequently with our elected conservative officials, particularly the Scott Walker, throughout Scott Walker's time in office. You look at, you know, our teachers. I can't help but think of the phrase: the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. Right? We had this opportunity, like you said, almost 15 years ago now, to implement high-speed rail across the state of Wisconsin, and Scott Walker chose not to. I think we're doing a disservice as you know, journalists and people who report the news to not note that this opportunity was presented to the state of Wisconsin in 2010, and Republican elected officials passed up on it. So we're going to go on to our next call. We got Dick from Madison on line 2. Dick, do you have any train, rail, or transportation stories you'd like to throw our way today?
We're just going
to
derail the conversation, am I right?
No,
I walked into that one.
There is a, I get to Saturday Evening Post, okay, and they had an archive in there last month. Vintage picture from 1935 of the Hiawatha that ran from Chicago to the Twin Cities, and it made that 420 miles, and it went through Madison, and it was capable of 100 miles an hour, and it made it in 6.5 hours in 1935.
Mm-hmm. Almost 100 years later, and we've gone significantly backwards, huh?
Backwards. And you should see the picture that it, adjacent to it, this really aerodynamic sky car, windows all the way around it. It's, you know, it's a fascinating ad. It's just, you look at it and you go, what in the heck were we thinking going away from, you know, we just went more towards, we got to drive the almighty vehicle and trucks on the road instead of sending it over rail. You know, as far back as Carter, he was proposing fixing the rail system mainly for freight, but of course, who stopped that? The lobby from the Teamsters, even though he still would have had major hubs, his idea, but he mainly wanted more of it to go via rail. And that only saves your roads, right?
Mm-hmm. We just and, you know, you noted the speed of the high-speed rail in 1935. Current Japanese bullet trains can hit up to 200 miles an hour, would make that six-and-a-half-hour journey cut in half. 3 hours? That's remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
It really is. Yeah, but at that time, you know, that was pretty heady stuff, being able to cruise consistently at 100. Like you say, here we are, not 90 years later, and we're just going backwards.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Dick. So if you got any more tangents you want to throw our way, please, 844-967-PARTY. No, we are not joking. It is always a party on Dueling Tangents.
You were very, very close. 844-96-PARTY, right?
96-PARTY, you're right. The 7 is the P.
That's actually our number.
It's crazy how that works out that way. So we'll be right back after the break. This is Dueling Tangents with Will and Evan, because you're lucky on this Tuesday afternoon. See you then. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. It is Tuesday, May 30th, and Ev, I didn't even touch on the fact that it is 81 degrees in my neck of the woods right now. What a lovely afternoon. You are welcome.
Hot, dude. I don't have any AC in my car, right? That's really my standpoint here, and it's awfully hot. That it was a rough ride in today. You know, don't feel bad for me. It was mighty warm.
Mm-hmm. See, I much prefer, actually, I shouldn't say that. I'm a big proponent of you can always add more layers, but you get to a certain point, you can't take off more layers, right?
Like that's not legally.
True. That's something my dad used to always say, you know, when I was a child and it was very cold, and I'd be like, you know, Pop, why do we live where it hurts to breathe? And so I do live by that motto, but at the same time, man, after long Wisconsin winters, there is nothing like a warm, sunny May day. Get outside, enjoy the weather, maybe get down to the ballpark. I'm reading from a piece at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from last week. I don't know if Luke got the chance to cover it, but American Family Field getting a new scoreboard next season. Estimated cost of $6.45 million. The major project is to be paid for by the Milwaukee Brewers Ballpark's publicly financed owner. The Southeast Wisconsin Professional Baseball Park District plans to spend $6.45 million to replace the ballpark's main scoreboard, which is nearing the end of its 10-year life. The new scoreboard will be the fourth largest in Major League Baseball, doubling the size of the current scoreboard's video display board. The district board voted 5-1 Thursday to approve the project. and the district is state. The district is a state-created agency which owns American Family Field and is responsible for the most for most of the capital investments under the terms of its lease with the Brewers. However, a proposal to spend $2 million to add a secondary scoreboard was tabled for lack of support from the board. Now, this obviously...
The board was tabled by the board, man.
Yes, this comes on the heels of last week where Major League Commissioner Rob Manfield essentially, I don't want to say threatened, that might not be the best way to phrase it, but the Brewers were told, you need to spend up to fix your stadium, which to me is a little shocking because I believe AmFam is one of the nicest in the country. I'll go on a little bit of a tangent for a second, if I may, that when I was in early high school, my mother took us on a trip to New York and we went to Citi Field, is it called, where the Mets played the year after it had opened. It was a brand new stadium. And even back then, I noted, boy, Miller Park at the time. It
sure
was,
is
course,
nice.
Miller Park.
Yeah.
It sure is nice compared to this brand new stadium that just opened. And at that time, Miller had been open for 6 or 7 years. Miller was opened in 2002, I believe. So it's pretty interesting to note what's going on in that regard. I'm a big proponent of kind of building the area around the ballpark. You look at the Deer District and how successful that has been and the millions and millions of dollars that that has brought into to the state. I would love to see something similar done with AmFam. So let's head back to the phones. I hear Nick from Madison is on line one. Nick, you got a tangent for us to throw this way on a lovely Tuesday afternoon?
I'm a perfect example of what Train will do. I don't know if you're a Wisconsin person forever. I just had nothing good to even think about Chicago. I was like, I hate Chicago, blah, blah, blah. I didn't realize it was because I always drove there. And discovered the Train at... where is that? In northern Illinois. I always forget the darn name of the little city. You know what I'm talking about?
I do not, but I do have an anecdotal story that's similar to yours. When I was young, we used to take the train down to Chicago all the time. My parents would take us down there when we wanted to go to the museum and stuff. And it just made it's traveling with young children so much easier.
I took the train out to the West Coast, my wife and I. It was like a two-day ride, and it was awesome. I mean, this stuff is great.
Hearing so many positive stories about trains. You would think it reminds me of the of that Princeton story a few years ago where it said public opinion has near zero impact on public policy. We have gotten so many positive responses. Obviously, I work as an organizer for my day gig. So going around and talking to people in the state of Wisconsin is kind of what I do for a living. And to answer your question, Nick, yes, I have been in Wisconsin my whole life. Unfortunately, I am in the Wow Counties, which I love my home and I love my community.
Nothing unfortunate about it, man. Yeah.
We're not as, let's say, mentally, I'm not as fortunate as some of the communities that I've spent a lot of time in as well, such as Madison and Milwaukee, but we're working on it, you know, baby steps. So when I get the opportunity to come down to the city, when I get the opportunity to go to Madison, I would love, love, love to be able to do so via rail. Unfortunately, that's not the case right now, but, you know, baby steps, like we said, one day at a time. So we touched on the Brewers a little bit. We touched on what's going on in our neck of the woods. I'd like to go a little bit west today. Did you see, Evan, what happened in the state of Minnesota?
No, sir.
Actually, about 2 hours ago, Minnesota became the 23rd state in the country to legalize recreational marijuana for adults after Governor Tim Walz signed the measure into law. The bill marks a watershed moment for Minnesota, which legalized medical cannabis about a decade ago. I have the exact date, 2014, medical was legalized. So now recreational will be legalized starting August 1st. Marijuana use and possession will be decriminalized and home growing of cannabis plants will become legal. The new law allows Minnesotans 21 and older to grow up to 8 cannabis plants in their home, though no more than 4 can be mature and flowering at a time. Adults will be allowed to possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana in public and as much as 2 pounds in their home. And Ev, it's a joke that we have talked about numerous times over the months and frankly years on Dueling Tangents, but Wisconsin is now surrounded by legalized states. Every state that we touch, Michigan legalized medical in 08 and recreational in 18. Minnesota, as we just said, in 14 in 2023. Illinois, medical was legalized in 2013, recreational in 2019. And even Iowa, while they do not have legalized recreational, legalized medical in 2017. Wisconsin is a island in the Midwest. One of only 10 states that does not have either medical or recreational. Can you believe that?
I can, unfortunately. Yes, I can, given where we live.
How sad is that, though, that you can believe that? It breaks my heart. So we got a couple more interesting stories we'll touch on. We'll go back to a little more in-depth on the Minnesota legalization effort that was passed today. This is Dueling Tangents. We'll see you right after the break. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. It is Tuesday, May 30th, and Will and Evan are here to party with you all week. We got some guests lined up for the rest
was?
Of the week.
I gotta cut in here. Do you know who this is?
Please, go ahead.
This is Eddie Murphy.
This is Eddie Murphy?
This is Eddie Murphy. And his girl likes to party all the time.
Wasn't this released, though, in like the mid-80s?
Oh, Lordy, yeah. It was a while ago. It was a little while ago.
Yeah, that's almost 10 years before my time, speaking of progress made within 10 years. Can you believe that, Ev? Boy, we are getting old. So touching back on the story that I hit on before the break, cannabis legalization in Minnesota. I want to read from an article from the Star Tribune, because I think this is what's really needs to be emphasized. Taxes, right? Revenue generated from legalized cannabis. It's something that we talk about in the state of Wisconsin all the time. And in Minnesota, this new law, again, signed today by Governor Tim Walz, will impose a 10% tax rate on the sale of cannabis products. It would not apply to products purchased through the state's medical cannabis program. The 10% tax rate will remain in place for 4 years. Then the Department of Revenue Commissioner would be charged with adjusting it if tax revenue raised by marijuana sales exceeded state regulatory costs. The state will collect additional revenue from application and license fees. For example, a cannabis cultivator will pay a $10,000 application fee, a $20,000 initial license fee, and $30,000 to renew its license, while manufacturers will pay $10,000 for both their application and initial licensing fees, and then $20,000 for renewal. Retailers will be paying less, about $2,500 for their application and initial license fees, and $5,000 for renewal, while a cannabis micro business will pay no initial fee, a $500 application fee, and $2,000 to renew its license. How much tax revenue does the state expect to raise from retail cannabis sales? According to the Minnesota Department of Revenue, estimates by the fiscal year 2027, recreational marijuana sales could generate about $107 million in annual tax revenue for the state and roughly $21.5 million for local governments. The department estimates state and local governments could take in more than $300 million in tax revenue from 2024 to 2027.
And that's a lot of money, man.
That is a lot of money. That is an absolute ton of money.
I really implore... I just implore the fine citizens of this state to get involved with this. It will not take long for the industry as a whole, the industry titans, to come in and really mop this thing up. They'll own every single corner of it. You know, there will be no mom and pop shops, as it were. And and I'm not kidding here, it's one of the great things about marijuana. It has a really, not only a rich culture, but the variety type. All of it. There's a tremendous variety there, and people have enjoyed that for decades. And we do risk losing that if things get truly industrial.
Oh, and ignoring just how fiscally irresponsible it is to not have already legalized recreational cannabis. I'll use Minnesota as a direct example. Standing behind Governor Walz as he signed cannabis legalization today was former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura and his wife, Terry. Obviously, Jesse is a longtime proponent of marijuana legalization. And he recalled how the drug helped to stop Terry's seizures about a decade ago. Unfortunately, the Venturas had to obtain marijuana illegally from Colorado until Minnesota set up its initial medical cannabis program. Jesse was quoted as saying, "We didn't want any families to go through what the First Lady and I went through. Now today, they will never have to. This is a huge day in our families' lives." You think about that amount of money, though, Ev, $300 million in tax revenue. How could we spend that, right? Well, the Star Tribune had some suggestions. How will tax revenue from marijuana sales be used? The state will share 1/5 of the tax revenue raised with local governments. Seems like that would be very appropriate considering the shared revenue constraints that we are seeing in the state of Wisconsin right now. Revenue will also be distributed to state agencies to cover the costs of oversight of the cannabis industry, law enforcement, and various grants created by the legislation. Starting in fiscal year 2026, yearly state expenditures related to cannabis will include $19 million for the Department of Health programs, $15 million for, quote, cannabis industry community renewal grants, unquote, $10.8 million for the Department of Public Safety, and $3.25 million for the University of Minnesota. Any revenue left over after required expenditures will go directly to the state's general fund. I cannot say enough how impactful that type of money can be to a state. I mean, mad props to Minnesota. They have been on a tear with a one-vote majority that I believe was won by less than 400 votes. If you don't believe elections have consequences, Minnesota right now is going to be a case study on that for the next 10 to 15 years. Take my word. We will be seeing this more and more and more. Let's hit up the phone line, Ev. While it's a party, we have everybody in the state of Wisconsin invited. And I hear Joe is on from Madison is on line one with us right now. Joe, what's on your mind on this lovely Tuesday afternoon?
Well, I wanted to return to the subject that you brought up in the first half hour, which was the extending of the rail lines to Green Bay that may be happening within the state of Wisconsin, and how what an exciting opportunity that is, and that even people, the Green Bay Packers, are kind of drooling over this and saying, please, can we be first? Can we be first? And I just, within that phone call, and it speaks to what you're talking about in terms of lost opportunities, not legalizing marijuana, it is useful to remember Dick called in that half hour and talked about the Hiawatha rail line. I wanted to just remind people that that rail line was designed by an icon of industrial designers. The guy's name was Brooks Stevens. He founded the Society of Industrial Designers within the United States back in 1944. Most of them were in New York. He chose to live in the Milwaukee area because he wanted to be close to this hub of industry for his clients. And his clients included Alice Chalmers, they included Harley Davidson, and it included the Milwaukee Road. And that is where the Hiawatha line came in. And I just wanted to mention one little thing. They were making the fares for this particular train in the Menominee Valley. And I thought, man, talk about missing opportunities, and bringing it back to the Tagalo, you know, when we had blew that off under Walker, and the money that we had to repay that company that was all set to work with us to have a vibrant train industry. Again, a lost opportunity. And I just would, it's not who we are. We are the people of Brooks Stevens, the smart, let's go forward, creative, industrious, and this a foray into Republicans where it's just sit there and watch these industries leave state and not do a darn thing about it is terribly, terribly sad. And I think that what we're seeing in our neighbor to the west, Minnesota, just gives us a heads up of, geez, missing the boat here, people, missing the boat. And it is really the way to go.
I feel like that SpongeBob meme where SpongeBob and Patrick are running outside having a great time. They're partying like it's a Tuesday on Dueling Tangents, and Squidward's just watching from the window, wishing he was out there. That's the state of Wisconsin right now, looking at Minnesota. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Opportunity cost has to be considered. Where could we have been had the Walker administration not come to power in 2010? I was still young at that time. So I love being able to hear from some of our incredibly knowledgeable listeners about what they went through, how the administration changed their life in the early to mid 2010s, how that changed the direction of the state going forward. I was a sophomore in high school at that time. So I was definitely interested in politics, but it wasn't the front of my mind. It wasn't the most important thing on my radar. And it's just been so rewarding being able to hear so many like-minded, intelligent individuals kind of say, like, this is what I experienced. This is how it hurt me. How can we learn from those mistakes and not make them again? So thank you so much for that, Joe. We got another call on the line. Karina on line two from MKE, I believe. Karina, how you doing this afternoon? What's up?
Hi, guys. Well, one mistake you were talking about, never have a Republican for a governor. That would be good. You know? And I guess we will do fine if we can achieve that. But unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be possible. But the thing is about transportation. You know, I'm a foreigner. And it was always a question of mine, how come the transportation sucks in United States? And I came up with my resolution for it. And it's the fact is there is more rich people and the lobbyists involved in oil than in making people life easier. So that's why they went and forgot about railroads altogether and went for a cars, because then the oil company can make money. Then the richer can continuously become richer, which is all about, right? So, and that's how I feel, because everywhere else you go, at least in Europe, people prefer to have transportation, public transportation, versus a car. People use car if they go somewhere, you know, like outside of the city, and still they parking the cars in the train station, go on the train and go over there knowing that there are more than enough options for transportation anywhere you go. Buses, cars, or we're talking about trains. It's not, this is because it's good for people, then that means it's not good for Republicans.
Well put.
We also have park and rides everywhere too. You know, we have the opportunity to go to certain locations, park there, and then move on to wherever you need to be. I think something else that we need to touch on in that regard, Karina, and you know, I might be wrong, but at least this has been my analysis of the situation, is Americans pride themselves on individualism, right? We are fiercely independent to the point where it's kind of like infested all political discourse. I think guns are the most obvious example of that, is, you know, okay, well, we have all these mass shootings, but you can't take my guns because it's my right to have my freedom and all that kind of stuff. I think you could make the argument that cars represent fierce independence from a transportation standpoint, in that nobody, Americans are so, I don't know if selfish would be the right
individualist
word, but,
you were right on the money.
Like, right, they only care about how can they handle and protect and advance their own personal interests?
Our own personal interests, right?
I don't care how anybody else gets around. I have a car, so I'll be okay. Yeah. I can go wherever I need to. And, you know, if you look at, I don't want to sit here and act like I'm some kind of historical scholar. I'm not. We'll have that on Thursday, and I'll touch on that as we get closer to the end of the show. But my understanding of human evolution is that we kind of, you know, we are a social species. We evolved to kind of dominate the world because we are so good at working together. We're able to communicate with large groups of human beings. We're able to protect each other. You know, I've read a story that the earliest recognized civilization came from finding a skeleton that had a broken bone that was healed.
That's
which
right.
means yeah. that an individual that couldn't survive on their own was protected by their community, and it allowed them to continue living. I mean, that's society, right? That is kind of the definition of a communal group, is that you protect each other, you protect your own. We evolved that way because humans have the unique ability to communicate amongst large groups of individuals. I'm not talking 10 to 15 to 20. I'm talking hundreds of millions of individuals can be on the same page. So why we don't fund these kind of socially beneficial transportation modes in the United States, it might just be because we pride ourselves on having the freedom to go where we want, do what we want without needing to rely on anybody else. There's a lot of people who think that's kind of a weakness, right?
Well, that notion is reinforced by, you know, the industrial nation that we've become, the Standard Oil Company, all these things where I think it could have gone either way, but it was made the attractive option to be individualist, to have your own things.
And I think
it's
broken, frankly. I mean, strong communities rely on each other. It takes a village to raise a child. You know, there's tons of famous statements and analogies I could make, but at the end of the day, we are much stronger together. A chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And I think that applies to every industry, particularly transportation. So we got one more segment for you after the break. We got some fun little tidbits to talk about the coming week. It's going to be a lot of fun, everyone. It's a party when Will and Evan are in town. We'll see you right after the break. This is Dueling Dandies. It is a party on this Tuesday, May 30th. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. Ev, you have found a lot of songs about partying. Can you think of a single topic outside of, you know, I guess generic love that would be more covered with musical homage than partying? I mean, we had tons of options to choose from.
Hey, no doubt about it. Hey, dislike, contempt, distrust, these things.
All of the above.
Without
so
a doubt.
I want to touch on something that I was looking up at over the break based on what on Karina's call was how many oil and gas conglomerates represent the largest companies in the United States. And I think we could kind of relate that back to cannabis legalization as well, in the sense that drug manufacturers also fill this list. So two of the top 16 and three of the top 48 are oil and gas conglomerates. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the top 30 are drug manufacturers. So I think Karina's probably onto something. If you want to sit here and question why society is kind of built around the continuation of some of these established industries, it's likely because the influence that they have at the national level financially is just absurd.
Outsized, to say the least, yes.
Yeah, to put it minimally, yes. So we got another call on the line. Catherine on line 3. Catherine, how are you doing this Tuesday afternoon? What's up?
I'm great. I'm really enjoying the show, Will and Evan. It's a good program, a lot to think about. I was going to say, tying a couple of things together, maybe they don't want all these high-speed trains because everybody's going to jump on the train and move to Minnesota. You think that might be the problem?
Well, Robin Voss's Twitter will say otherwise. He has been tweeting nonstop that, you know, Minnesota's lost to the radicals and all of these young people are going to start moving to Wisconsin, despite the fact that the data says the opposite is true. But I don't know.
Yeah. I doubt that. But I'm going to go all the way back to one thing where you mentioned they say there's a 10-year life of a scoreboard and they have to replace the scoreboard at Miller Park. I still call it Miller Park.
You're not alone, but yes.
You can't just upgrade it. I mean, I don't know. It was already a brand name, Miller, but at any rate, why can't they upgrade it? Because, I mean, bigger and bigger scoreboard just draws you away from the field. And I think we watch our screens enough. We can just not see a bigger screen. I was just there for Mother's Day on Mother's Day, and there's so much information on there, the pitch clock. I can't imagine if there's something there that you really want to know, you know, when the person joined the team and their previous batting average. And, you know, it's plenty of information. And I can't understand why they can't fix the mechanism behind it. Is that so irreplaceable that they have to spend all that money to replace it in 10 years? I don't get it. But I want to mention one other thing, too. When I was there, I found out they had a brownout. They were not a brownout. A section of the concession stand lost all of its electricity. It was completely black. And that had happened twice. It had happened just previously, too. So there's something definitely wrong with the electricity to the concession stand, because one of the women at the concession stand told me they had to close down previously a couple weeks ago because they had no electricity to run, you know, the c- credit cards and, you know, sell things. So they definitely need to upgrade their electrical facility. But
sounds like that $6.45 million could be better spent elsewhere. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I don't want to sit here and act like I'm very well versed on the technological components of massive ballpark screens. You know, maybe they want to include their college major, what high school they went to, and the street they grew up on. So in case anybody wants to, you know, break into their email accounts or something, I'm not really sure. But that's a great point, Catherine. It does seem that there's a lot of more impactful things that money could be spent on. But I don't get to make those decisions. The district board voted 5-1 Thursday to approve the project, as we stated. So what would be interesting is to see the one no vote, to ask why they voted no. Might be able to get some more information in that regard.
It's got
to
be so close to Catherine's point, you know, as far as
I would imagine.
Bougie.
It makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I do want to talk on before the end of the show, and we'll get into it in more depth later in the week, is, of course, reports over the weekend that Kevin McCarthy and Joe Biden have closed on a deal regarding the debt ceiling. Now, a lot of more progressive individuals, such as Pramila Jayapal, has said, quote, "The White House should worry about progressive caucuses' support from the coming deal." She said, "I'm not happy with some of the things that I'm hearing about." This, like I said, we will touch on later in the week as more information comes available, but obviously, that will be the big news story for the coming days and about a week if we are able to make it that long. One thing that I also want to touch on before the end of the break that we will get into in more detail later on in the week is this interesting story out of Texas where the Attorney General Ken Paxton has been impeached by the Republican House in a vote of 121-23. Again, more information will likely be coming out in the coming days, and we will be sure to jump on that through some of the excellent guest speakers I have lined up for the rest of the week, just to give you a little preview. So tomorrow we will be having our Wisconsin Revolution Executive Director, Andre Walton, who is a very good friend of mine, obviously, on to discuss the progressive movement in the state of Wisconsin, where we can go from here and how we're trying to advance it. I will be having another great friend of mine, Professor Emeritus Harvey J.K. of UW Green Bay, on Thursday. We're going to continue a conversation we had about a week and a half ago with Alan Minsky on the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights. And I'm working on a guest for Friday, but I don't want to reveal that yet as it has not yet been confirmed. So, Ev, it sounds like we're going to have a party all week, not just Tuesday. I wanted to introduce what a Will and Evan party looked like before we started, you know, bringing in the heavy hitters. But did you have fun today, Ev?
Oh, no, always, man. Always. I live for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's always good to see you. I missed you last week. I was listening
buddy.
In. It's just
oh,
not
that's
the same
so that's
you.
So nice, man. I appreciate that. I miss being here. I'm going to be real. I was on vacation, and I took every opportunity I could to come in or just do a little something here or there.
When you weren't staying up all night anyways, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. But hey, someone's got to be on that wall. You want me on that wall.
So, and one more shout out I want to give before the end of the show today, before I forget, there was an excellent Politico article today titled "Numbers Nobody Has Ever Seen: How the GOP Lost Wisconsin." And our very own Mike Kroot getting a shout out in the article as it discussed civic media, our very own Sage Weil, and the impact in the state of Wisconsin that progressive radio has seen, as well as kind of the changing demographics of the state, for lack of a better term, how certain policies, particularly abortion, really, really impacted the results of the election in a state that's generally considered to be a true 50-50 state. 11 points would say otherwise. So this is Dueling Tangents with Will and Evan, because you are lucky to be here on Party Tuesday with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Don't miss us for the rest of the week. I got guests lined up that I think you will very, very much enjoy. The progressive movement is alive and well in the state of Wisconsin. Have a great rest of your day, party people. Take it easy.
Littering.
Oh, officer, that's not ours.
Littering and, littering and.
And,
littering and.
Littering and.
Littering and smoking the reefer.